Oh, it's the most wonderful time of the year. I'm not even going to fucking sing because I've literally got the worst singing voice of all time. Like, maybe not of all time. I'm sure there's somebody worse, but it's pretty low. It's pretty bad. It's definitely top 10 worst. Anyways, Rewire Your Mindset book. My new book is officially out. So Rewire Your Mindset, Own Your Thinking, Control Your Actions, Change Your Life is now available on Amazon. So amazon.co.uk, amazon.com, or any Amazon online that you use. So hopefully in the new year, it'll be available in selected new stores, bookstores even, in new book available in bookstores. I think that's what I was trying to say, and I got muddled up. Anyways, Rewire Your Mindset, the book I've been talking about for the last 18 months on the podcast. It has taken 18 months from start to completion. It is finally available, talking all things rewiring your mindset. So the four quadrant formula, building confidence, handling self-doubt, building mental toughness, self-discipline, owning your thinking, not letting your biggest enemy live between your two ears, and how to completely rewire your mindset. So any episode that I've touched on over the last 18 months on mindset has been built on the philosophy in the new book, or they're the philosophies for the new book. So I hope you enjoy it. If you end up picking it up, be sure to let me know. Tag me on Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness. I'll put the Amazon link in the description so you can order your copy, or you can go check it out on Amazon. If you do, be sure to let me know. As I said, tag me on Instagram. Let me know what you think. And here's today's episode. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. So I'm trying this new intro at the start of episodes, and I'm adding it to the actual separate introduction today because I had an absolute complete fuck up on today's podcast because me and Charlie were chatting. So today's guest, Charlie Johnson, second appearance on the podcast. He was also on in August on Identifying Your Trigger Foods with Charlie Johnson. I'll link that in the show notes. A very popular episode from the summer. But we were recording this podcast, and 25 minutes in, the fucking electricity went. Like, I literally record in like my studio and I've got blackout blinds, like the whole room's darked out apart from the lights that are on, because it just puts me into full podcast mode, and it just, like, everything went black. And I'm like, fuck, I'm like, did I pass out? I'm like, did I die? I was like, no, the fucking electricity went. And it didn't save the first 25 minutes of today's episode. So this was take two. So it's something I make reference to at the very beginning of today's episode, that Charlie was amazing enough to reschedule his episode or his podcast for after this one to another day because we had to run over because of the second recording. I am delighted that we got to do this episode, and I hope you enjoyed today's format as much as I enjoyed recording it. So today's guest, Charlie Johnson, as I mentioned, who was on in August, is a transformation coach, bodybuilder, and nutrition expert, and works primarily with people looking to transform their physiques. From a good example is people that are into fitness, that have been training for a few years, that are looking to completely move to the next level, either photo shoot level physique or competition level physique. And he tends to prioritize working with those individuals. But today we jumped around on lots of different topics, from weight gain, shift work, fasting, and the Game Changers documentary. So this is a Q&A style format. So I did a trial episode with Paul Dermody a few months ago that is very similar to this format, where I put up on my Instagram stories, Brian_Keen_fitness, on a Q&A box or a question box on any questions that you wanted to send in for me and Charlie. So I'll read out the four questions and you can decide if this is the kind of episode that you're going to enjoy, or if you want to skip straight to a question, even though we overlap between them, and you can see if it's the kind of thing you're looking for. So first question today, and we go order of Charlie answers and then I answer my thoughts on it. So I work shift work, high stress, and leading to weight gain. Any tips? So broke this one into actual tips for shift workers. Dealing with stress. I think it's a very valuable give and take from me and Charlie in this one for people who are looking to maintain their stress levels or manage their stress levels, either because of a stressful environment that they're in, a stressful job, or just being a naturally stressful person, and some tips and tricks on that, and then weight gain and how that applies to shift work. Then we jumped into determining if you work better off carbohydrate or fats, something that's been coming in very frequently on my social media recently, so I wanted to cover it in today's episode. Thoughts on fasting, intermittent and microfasting. So I let Charlie take most of this question because I've covered it myself in previous Q&As, and also we did it on the first recording. I'm like, Charlie, I can't fucking talk about fasting again. So I skipped over this one and just gave a little bit of my two cents at the end. And then the last question is the first time this has been covered on the podcast, and that is the very popular the right word? The very well-watched documentary on Netflix called The Game Changers. So our opinions on that from both sides. So this is the first time that I have talked at length about The Game Changers documentary. So that's everything from today's episode. So without further ado, here is today's episode, Q&A style format for Charlie Johnson on his second appearance on the podcast. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm going to do this very, very quickly because I have my man Charlie Johnson on the other end of this call, and we were fucking 25 minutes into a podcast, and this is, I don't know, is it an advantage of living in the country, or did a fucking sheep chew through an electrical cord or something, but the electricity went 25 minutes into our recording. So now this is our take two. Charlie, welcome back to the podcast.
Round two. That's very much an Irish problem, I think, like countryside problem. Oh, you don't get that so much in London.
I know. It's like this never happened when I was living in the city. But you know what? Instead of jumping into the questions that we covered, Charlie, when shit goes wrong, and I love because even your attitude on this was so, you're like, fuck it, come on, we'll just do it again. Talk to me about what you do with setbacks and when things don't go to plan in any area of your life. What's your kind of automatic go-to thought process on that?
That's actually very timed conversation, to be fair, because I spent a good 4 or 5 hours of my day with a friend today who's had like a bit of a major life crisis to a lot of respects, and like yourself as well as me are both very busy individuals, and like I like to surround myself with positivity, so I sometimes find it a little bit difficult to like be around negativity and deal with that, but I also see the value in being a good person and helping people and offering out hand when people really need it. So I took a huge amount in that, even though I did find it a little bit draining. But for me, like I personally, like opening up and being vulnerable, suffer a little bit with anxiety, with having like a lot going on. And the easiest way I find to deal with that is a phrase I like. And that's like basically like taking action to deal with anxiety. So for me, like the best way to deal with any problem is just make a decision and move on. So like, okay, the podcast balls up and it didn't record. Okay, we just do it again. Like, it's not the end of the world. No one's died. Like, okay, it was 25 minutes. Me and Brian got to chat shit to each other for a bit and discuss a few things that are pretty cool. But now we get to do it again and make it even better. So, like, ultimately all you can do is, like, you can't go back in time and undo things that have gone wrong. You can only plan ahead and try and be positive. And I think, like, the more positive thoughts you put out into the world, the more positive things will happen to you generally.
Love that mindset, and I can't bear to go on the first two questions that we covered because I'm like, fuck, I was like, we covered these questions, but we're going to make them better now, but we're definitely going to flip the order of today's podcast. For those of you listening, Charlie was on in August in a very popular episode about identifying your trigger foods, the amount of DMs and messages I got off the back of that, because there was so much value in there. It's a belter of an episode, hence the round two on the Q&A format. So I'll link that in the show notes for everyone that wants to listen. But today we're jumping on a Q&A style format. So for those of you who weren't here because it was only me and Charlie for the last 25 minutes, and like now it's fucking disappeared into the world of the fucking Wired Network or wherever the fuck it disappeared into, it's gone. But we are doing Q&As, so questions, I'm throwing them Charlie's direction and then I'm taking them back. So these came in from my Instagram stories for people that wanted to send in questions that for the opinion of both me and Charlie. So Charlie, instead of jumping back on our first two questions, I'm curious, because you're probably the best person to ask on this, because you work with so many, clients who have very busy lifestyles. That's, you know, one of your main messages is I help people get in shape, you know, people that are living busy lifestyles. And something I get asked quite a lot on is about shift work. And I know they're not necessarily shift workers that you work with. A lot of them are corporate, a lot of people just busy lifestyle with family, etc. But when it comes to shift work, high stress, and that leading to weight gain, do you have any tips for shift workers in general? And then we can kind of digress into dealing with stress and dealing with weight gain because of that. When it comes to shift workers, what's your kind of philosophy or thought process towards that?
For me, firstly, I don't know if you'd agree, but the big thing I think shift workers really need to focus on is, it might seem obvious, is quality of sleep. So obviously their sleep pattern can be a little bit all over the place. However, what you can focus on is making sure that the quality of sleep you are getting is optimized. So like, as we discussed on version one of this podcast, in regards to caffeine, like being very aware of in terms of like times of taking in caffeine and you being aware of your blood pressure, all these different factors that you can try and control, which will optimize your health and your breathing while sleeping. So for example, myself, one of the biggest revelations of my entire life in terms of health, sleep, recovery, and probably longevity for me, it sounds ridiculous, something so simple, is using nasal strips. And that became very poignant in the last week or two, for example. So around this time last year, funnily enough, I had very high blood pressure, around 160, just from being very stressed with working loads and like various different reasons, having a hell of a lot going on. And I obviously clocked but this has already obviously crept up. And I was like, I need to sort this out. And funnily enough, I got talking and working with a chap called Dr. Dean. So he's a fellow Irishman who is probably the most intelligent person in the fitness world out there when it comes to anything science related. And one of the things he first recommended to me was using nasal strips. Now, why to use nasal strips is because basically, being a slightly bigger individual, I struggle to breathe through when I lie on my back for a start. And also I don't breathe well through nasally through my nose. So in terms of nitric oxide production, which causes vasodilation, so you're basically your blood vessels relaxing, that mainly comes actually 70% through the nasal cavity when you breathe. So if you're not breathing properly when you're actually asleep through your nose, therefore you're not getting the nitric oxide coming in, your blood pressure will naturally be higher. And also the quality of your sleep will be poorer because you're constantly waking yourself up because you can't actually breathe properly. So that in itself has made like literally changed my life. And so I check my blood pressure every week just for health and longevity purposes. And I had a week or two ago where like I was a bit crazy with work and I just got slack with it. I didn't actually bother using the nasal strips. And my blood pressure jumped up 14 points in a week. And that was the only thing that had changed. I was a little bit more stressed than usual. And then the week I realized this had obviously happened, started using nasal strips again, and my blood pressure dropped back down again another 14 points the following week. So for me, like talking about anecdotal evidence, that clearly makes a massive difference in terms of my overall health, my recovery, and the quality of my sleep. So like if you work shifts and you have a very high stress environment, one thing I'd monitor is your blood pressure. And then I would also be very aware and conscious of the actual quality of sleep you're getting and the environment you sleep in. So another thing I've recently implemented in the last month or two, my wife thinks I'm a freak though, don't laugh, is wearing what's called a Manta sleep mask to basically cover my eyes because I'm very sensitive to light. So particularly if you're doing, like when sleeping, so if you're doing shift work and trying to sleep during the day at all, having a perfectly black environment and like darkness will again massively improve the quality of your sleep, and then also mean that you have less of an impact in terms of dealing with the stress from shift work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice. I'm going to piggyback a little bit on what you said about the sleep environment being very important. That understanding that all the photoreceptors through obviously your eyes and through your body to either cover your eyes or black out your room. So people that are working night shift, I generally try, as you said, focus on their quality of sleep. Like there's going to be certain circadian disruptions just from your night day cycle, your melatonin production, your hormone that tells you you're tired isn't going to be working as well as somebody that's on a normal day shift work. However, you can kind of mimic some of that nighttime environment by blacking out your blinds or getting blackout curtains or using face masks, etc. This is also an area when people are talking about shift work. And I'm not a massive fan of melatonin production, which is a fucking natural thing. Melatonin supplementation even. Just because if you keep consuming it for too long, your body will stop naturally producing it. However, I think it's an amazing tool in your toolkit. So if you're traveling across time zones, melatonin is always one of those supplements that I pack. You know, something we talked about on round one that people will never know about is that when you're traveling across plane, when you were talking about fasting on planes, and that's something similar I do if I'm going on long haul flights and I'm crossing several time zones, I'll always bring melatonin with me to try and get my sleep cycle on track faster. And also for shift workers, I think it can be a useful tool in your toolkit because you're not going to be producing melatonin as well as somebody that's following a normal nighttime daytime routine. Stress is another thing. We mentioned relieving stress briefly there. What are your personal protocols that you either use yourself, Charlie, or with clients for people relieving stress? And then we get into the weight gain around this, which is kind of, they're nearly like three separate questions that overlap. But when it comes to stress in general, what's your stress relieving techniques? How do you handle it? And what do you advise clients who are quite high stressed individuals or in high stressed environments? What do you recommend they do?
So again, this very much, I think stress, as we said on podcast number one, is like everything is very person dependent and depends on your personality. So for example, for me, I've got a very type A personality, which I would say you do as well, Brian, like being slightly like hyperactive. And I just want to go all the time. Whereas like, if you're like that, probably the best thing you can probably do is make yourself sit down for like 3 minutes twice a day and just do nothing, like almost like zone off. So in that respect, I'm a big fan that I actually genuinely really struggle to make myself do it at all. And that's use an app called Headspace, which is like a form of meditation app where you literally just sit and just breathe and just like think and just like clear your mind. That I find is a very powerful tool. And when you can almost make yourself, take yourself to the extreme of slowing your mind and your body down, I find it almost gives you another gear in the other respect to be able to push your body and your mind to the other end of the spectrum and work even harder. So that's the first thing I'd probably look at. The other thing I would say is like trying to, like you run your day, the day doesn't run you. So one thing that's a bad habit is people being reactive, for example, for their phone or email. So something I'm a big fan of is like, say for example, when I go and train, I put everything on airplane mode. No one can contact me. That's like my time to myself. And I think about nothing else other than what I'm doing in that like rep set or whatever. And that for me is like my freedom for the day, where like no one can get in touch with me. Like it's just like peace and quiet almost. So I think it's very important that everyone has that like breathing space in the day, because as beautiful and amazing, like we're on technology now, like we would be having this conversation that thousands of people can listen to. Without technology, it's an amazing vehicle and tool that we have at our disposal to help people. However, it does also is detrimental in respect that everyone is like at reach all the time and everyone's almost overly stimulated, going through phones constantly, swiping through Instagram, TikTok, whatever it might be. So I think there's a lot of power in being able to control your own access to these social media platforms and messaging, and vice versa, that being able to access you, if that makes sense. And I think that gives you control of your life.
Yeah, I think that's systems, having systems around whatever we talked about trigger foods in the first podcast, but having systems around whatever triggers your stress levels as well. And you made a very interesting point there, and I do something very similar. Even though you go on airplane mode during the gym, I never turn my phone off silent mode. So nobody's able to ring me. The only person that's messages come through on my phone is my mum. And I've got like dedicated times that I'm on social media. And that for me is systems around, you know, you mentioned anxiety at the top of the podcast. I had a lot of self-imposed anxiety around, you know, comparison syndrome, which we talked about on the very first podcast in August. And these were all issues that I had that I'm like, right, there's something causing this. There's something triggering me to feel this way. There's something triggering me to feel anxious, or there's something triggering me to feel ramped up with my stress levels. I'm like, okay, what is it? And when I go through my day, I'm like, well, I'm fucking replying to every email as it comes in instead of batching it. Or everyone's able to reach me at all moments during the day, whether it's 2 a.m. or 2 p.m. Or I'm on social media constantly flicking through randomly. I'm like, right, these things are causing me anxiety and stress. I need to put systems in place around them. So I think identifying, as you mentioned earlier, identifying the triggers on what's causing the stressful environment. Now, working shift work in a high stress environment, of course, your work is going to be your stressor, but it might be worth looking into short-term stressors to handle chronic stress. One of the things that I found by proxy, by pure luck, when I was training to run through the Sahara in 2018 and then again running through the Arctic in 2019, was I did a lot of heat exposure. So when I was training for the Sahara, because I knew it was going to be 40 degrees, 50 degrees, I was doing a lot of work in the sauna. And as a result, I found out about heat shock proteins. I found out about your body's response to extreme heat in extreme conditions. And like my mindset and my stress levels were just massively reduced after a bout in the sauna. And the same thing happened when I was training for the Arctic last year, exposing myself to really, really cold temperatures to try and prepare my body for that minus 38 degrees. But I was getting something very similar with those extreme conditions, cold shock proteins, the opposite. And understanding for me the benefit of short-term stressors, which training is a short-term stressor, fasting is a short-term stressor, cold exposure, heat exposure, are all short-term stressors that can help you deal with chronic stress. So they are all tools in your toolkit on top of what Charlie mentioned that are all worth considering as well.
And I think that I took a lot from that myself then, Brian, so thank you. And I think you probably have this pretty dialed down, and that's probably something I need to learn from you. I think I am probably starting to realize more now that I have control more of my life, because I do very much like what you say in terms of like someone messages me, I reply straight away, they email straight away, because I've got that type A, like I have to get stuff done. Whereas like I can do whatever I want, to control things where I want and reply to people when I want. So like you can ultimately do like an hour twice a day, and that is just as effective as jumping in and out all day long and getting distracted. So I think that's like a really awesome system you've got there.
Yeah, it's pure down to the productivity levels. Like I find myself, even when I trialed it and experimented with it, I'm like, I'm actually getting more done and I feel better. I'm like, this is literally a win-win-win all around. Which brings on to kind of the last point in this question. And I'm curious if you've had any experience with this yourself, more so working with clients. Shift work and weight gain. Do you find those two things can be synonymous, or is it a case that it's just easier for people to, I don't want to say use it as an excuse, because there's definitely some circadian and metabolic things going on when you're disrupting that natural circadian rhythm and not working during the day or not being out and about during the day and sleeping during the day. But have you any experience working with shift workers who have either came to you because weight gain was the issue, or anyone that you were working with who switched into a shift work and found that their weight started to increase because of it?
I personally don't think there is a huge issue with shift work, providing you can get your quality of your sleep like nailed and down. The problem is I find that people, they often end up overeating and they struggle to, like if they have a change and start doing a shift pattern, they struggle to almost accommodate like the nutritional changes that need to be put in place when you're doing, like when you move into a shift work phase, which often will lead to some like phases where you might have to fast for a few hours, which is obviously a topic we'll come on to later, just to balance things out. So it balances out over the week, because you can't, like if you're in a, say for example, a bodybuilding style or a fitness, elite fitness style diet, we're eating every 2-3 hours. If because you're on like some crazy shift work, you're gonna be up for 20 hours, that doesn't mean you can then eat an extra 2 meals, because then that's an extra, say 800 calories, then you're going to gain weight. If that's not your goal, obviously, to gain weight, then that's not going to be a good idea. So again, it comes back down to the specifics of the individual and their scenario. But realistically, I don't think there's as much detriment in doing shift work as I think a lot of people perceive. It's just having it set up correctly and optimized. And I think one of the things to probably look at that is like the workout window and making sure you fuel yourself around that window, ideally. That for me would probably be the first thing. I would say the rest of the meals you can pretty much put in as you like, but I wouldn't be too concerned that necessarily doing shift work is going to make you gain a ton of weight. Realistically, in my opinion, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think, as you said, I think there's something people might look to use as a slight excuse, perhaps.
Yeah, I think there's, I kind of have two conflicting thoughts on this, because when I either work with people that are coming through shift work, factory workers, nurses, etc., I understand that there's definitely some hormonal and metabolic disruptions going on from, normally, as you said, it's down to the lack of quality of sleep, which is a real issue. You know, if you're working a shift work and you're not getting high quality sleep, the problems are stemming from that. That's the root problem. So if you do what Charlie mentioned, that is going to have a massive benefit on your ability to lose body fat or hit any end goal that you're trying to hit, because you've got the root issue, which is my sleep quality is really poor because I'm trying to sleep during the day. If you get that dialed in, it's going to make everything else significantly easier. So pulling from that side, I'm like, there are some disruptions, things like leptin, ghrelin, like they can all become down regulated if you're not sleeping. So it's not necessarily that it's the shift work is the problem. And even now, as I'm saying it out loud, I don't think it's the shift work per se that's the problem. It comes back to setting up an environment and setting up systems with your food, with your training, getting your pre and post workout window right, getting your quality of sleep correct, you know. And if there's times when you, as you know, nurses and doctors are great examples. When I've worked with those clientele where they could be working a 20, 22 hour shift, I'm like, right, you're going to have some negative effects from that, but that comes down to sleep quality. So it's a case of building systems around that, and don't let it be an excuse, because it is very, very easy to let shift work and working nights in particular become an excuse for not getting to the shape that you want, because you're like, oh, fuck it, I'm working night shift, what's the point? You know, I'm hungry all the time, I'm not sleeping, etc. It's like, no, you can definitely get things built around your lifestyle to compensate for the fact that your sleep quality isn't as good as it would be if you were sleeping normally at nighttime. But you just have to make sure that you're completely taking responsibility for it on the front end, getting your blackout blinds, getting your mask to sleep at nighttime, getting your meals and pre and post workout meals set up, and making sure that you're still training. You know, I think training works really, really well here as structure for the day. You know, one of the things I generally tell my clients who work shift work, I'm not sure if you're similar, Charlie, is I tell them to try and mimic what they would do on a normal day. You just flip the hours around. So you might be getting up at 8 p.m. I'm like, cool, have your breakfast, go to the gym, go to work, have your post-workout meal, you know, and keep your day as you would if you were getting up at 8 a.m. You know, you're just flipping it by 12 hours because you're working night shift. I find that people have a lot of success with that. I'm not sure what your thoughts are in terms of what you do with your shift workers in that respect.
That's exactly the same strategy I would use. And the only thing I would change with that potentially is if, say, for example, say you're like flipping their shift round and they're starting the day at 8 p.m., but they would train at the end of their day. Say, for example, it's what would be the equivalent of 7 a.m. the next day. What I might get them to do is maybe fast for the first few hours of their day from 8 p.m. to, say, 12 p.m. If that allows them to have a longer window of them being, if they're going to be awake for a long window of time, because I'd rather they had a small window of fasting at the start of that scenario, and then they could eat consecutively for every 3 to 4 hours, then they had bigger gaps of like 5 hours between meals, if that makes sense. Because I find once a client, if they haven't eaten, then they're generally okay hunger wise, but once they start to eat, they want to, like, if they're training hard, they'll start craving food every 3 to 4 hours otherwise.
One of the things we mentioned with the recording that we lost, and I want to bring it up here because I think there's so much value, because I didn't actually realize we fell both on so opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to caffeine intake. Talk about what we were mentioning earlier about caffeine intake and your ability to have a cup of coffee late in the evening and go to bed, and people's ability to metabolize caffeine. I think that's a really interesting point that I want to re-bring back up on this podcast.
Okay, so this was something that was brought to my attention, funnily enough, which I'd always been sort of fairly aware of, to be fair. It was brought to my attention by Ben Pekulski. I was at a dinner with him for a friend's birthday, and like it came up somehow. And he said that people who are blonde-haired, blue-eyed, they tend to have the enzymes and genetics that they can, they're high metabolizers of caffeine, so they can clear caffeine through their system very, like, very, very quickly. And as soon as he said that, I was like, that makes perfect sense. Obviously, I've got blonde hair and blue eyes, but I can go out for dinner and I can have a really nice coffee and I can go to bed 10 minutes later. It makes no difference to me, actually, like, in terms of falling asleep. The only thing it does have an effect on is in terms of the quality of sleep. And the only way I pick that up is by using my Oura Ring, which is something I mentioned on the previous podcast. Now, the Oura Ring, what it would do, it tracks your heart rate through the night and basically like how restless you are. So with your heart rate through the night, you generally want to have almost like a hammock shape, and you want your lowest heart rate generally like during the middle of the night, where your heart rate will drop. But what I find is if I have caffeine late at night or a meal right before going to bed, my heart rate would be elevated and be much higher than it would be normally, which would have an indication, which have an effect obviously on recovery, which isn't ideal. So that's the only negative I notice in terms of like physiologically in terms of caffeine for me. But in terms of me, like we also spoke in detail in regards to on podcast one earlier, in regards to pre-workouts. And for example, I don't really recommend pre-workouts for clients. Like if they want to use them, by all means, like superb, but I'd rather they invested their money in better quality food, their own education and learning to train better would be the first thing I'd look at. But as I said, I use pre-workouts because I'm in a fortunate position that I get provided them by a supplement company. So I have them at my disposal, so I will use them. If I don't have them when I'm traveling, for example, I'll just have a black coffee because I love coffee and I find caffeine pre-workout works really well. But I don't get any crash from using a pre-workout or anything like that. Whereas you yourself, Brian, said that you'd literally be like curled up in the corner like a few hours after a pre-workout when it crashes and it leaves you in a bit of a mess.
Oh, like I remember, as I said, just, you know, on the first recording, like back in the days of, say, Jack 3D and Craze, like those supplements, like I'm the complete opposite to you, as in the highs are so high, but the lows are so low. Like I would get the highs and I would be bouncing around the gym. Like I would be ready to hit up a club, hit up a rave. I'd be like, fucking, like life is amazing. And then 3 hours later, I'd be curled up on the couch and I'm like, nobody likes me. I have no friends. Like it was such a polar opposite. But like, I can't take any caffeine after 12 p.m. in the day or else I can't sleep. So it was such an interesting point. I'm glad we got to touch on it again, because everybody on this podcast listening either is like me or like you or somewhere in between. And it's important to understand, even though most caffeine has, they say, 5.5 hour half-life, etc., meaning that half of it will be in your system 5.5 hours later. Different people have different genetic makeups and different enzymes that are going to allow them to metabolize it a lot faster. Hence why Charlie can have it at 7 p.m. or after dinner and like go straight to bed, where, you know, I would literally be fucking staring at the ceiling until 4 a.m.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to everything. Every person on this entire planet is unique and beautiful in their own ways, and you just need to optimize whatever you do for yourself. And that's why, for me, from a coaching perspective, I'm so into my clients giving me like very specific biofeedback on everything, because the better the information they can provide you as a client, the better the decisions you can make as a coach. Because like, no matter how good a coach I am, I'm not Mystic Meg. I can't feel what you feel in terms of your body. So in terms of food that digests well with you, in terms of anything that sits heavy on you that affects your sleep, if caffeine makes you feel anxious, all these things you need to be aware of, conscious of, and pass that back to your coach so then they know, okay, you can't handle caffeine. Let's not have that after 12 o'clock, like Brian, for example. Let's not have pre-workouts. These don't sit well with you. This would be a bad idea. And it's just providing that feedback. And I think that is the key for anyone who's got a coach or a mentor they work with in any respect. Like success in everything in life, a lot of it comes down to communication and being able to communicate and articulate how you feel to someone else so then they can make the right decision for you going forward if you're working with them.
Yeah, no, that's such an amazing point. I couldn't agree more with that. Charlie, next question. How do you determine if you work better with carbohydrates or fats? So this is an interesting question, because I know it very much depends on the person and per client, but talk about your thought process on what you advise people do, because this is something that's been coming in very frequently on my channels recently. People going, should I eat more carbs? Should I eat more fat? You know, fat adaption versus carb adaption. What are your kind of thoughts on that? And what do you apply with your clients? And talk about a little bit what you apply yourself, because I'm sure there's a little bit of crossover there. Or if there's not, you know, talk me through that.
Okay, so there's a lot of mixed opinions and a lot of like media scaremongering, in my opinion, to do with carbohydrates and fats, to be fair, out in the general public. Now, neither of which carbohydrates or fats will make you fat. Either of those macronutrients in excess will make you fat. And that is like the be all and end all, essentially. In terms of my thoughts and how I like to optimize things, I like to have a very logical like thought process in terms of like how your body would utilize food. So in terms of what's our end goal, say for me, generally, my clients are generally high level athletes, or they're looking for like physique transformations to get in the best shape possible. So for me, what I'm looking to try and do is basically fuel performance in the gym to create an adaptive response. So build muscle and burn body fat. Now, how am I going to do this? I'm going to look to try and push, have like a nutrient timing approach in terms of the diet by pushing carbohydrates more heavily around the workout window. So pre-workout, intra-workout and post-workout. And then the rest of the time, I would look to probably lower the carbohydrates and increase the fat content. Now, obviously, this is all person specific. There's a couple of major things in this you need to be aware of. Now, one of those is your body fat levels. Generally, I would say, and I've noticed this like anecdotally with myself, the fatter I am, the less carbohydrates I can handle. The leaner I get, the more my body tends to utilize nutrients and carbohydrates more efficiently, so I can push up carbohydrates higher. So when I have a high carbohydrate day, I can ramp it up even higher when I'm leaner because my body just tends to turn through the carbohydrates and the glycogen more. Whereas when I'm softer, my body doesn't tend to run as efficiently from my own personal experience. Now, this coming back to clients, I would personally say that from experience, I find that females tend to tend to run better and more efficiently from a slightly higher fat diet. And that's been proven from some studies I've seen in terms of like the way they run in terms of them from a metabolic point of view and hormonally, that women tend to do better with a slightly higher fat diet versus carbohydrate. But again, I'm a big believer, as we said earlier, in terms of like listening to the client and how they feel and like what works for them. So if you said to me, look, I find that I run better on a higher fat diet, then cool, let's run with that. We'll try that, see how we get on. If you said to me, look, I love carbs, like carbs are life, that's what I want to do, then cool, we'll focus more on that. But again, it comes down to the individual. For myself and clients generally, I will have some form of a carb cycling diet through the week, which would basically be like, as I said already, a nutrient timing approach where on diet days where you're weight training, the carbohydrates would be higher. And days where it's a rest day, the carbohydrates will be much lower, like even potentially like zero, but the fat and the protein would be slightly higher to offset that and keep the calories up. Now, there's a few different caveats to that. So for example, if you were training fasted first thing in the morning, I would give you more carbohydrates in the evening to saturate glycogen overnight so that you were fueled slightly for the morning because you're not going to have a meal pre-training. So there's a few individual nuances that obviously would come into play with this, but in a general consensus, that's how I find I get the best results with my clients and also from anecdotal experience with myself. I don't know what you find works best for you. Obviously, Brian, you're doing a lot more endurance events now, which is obviously slightly different in terms of demands on your body, and obviously your end goal is not like necessarily just pure like aesthetic point of view, but I'd be fascinated to see your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so again, it's such a great point in terms of, again, goal specific to the person is always going to be the answer when it comes to any dietary advice. But what I do myself, and we touched on this briefly, and I'm going to retouch on it now just because I literally had this conversation with one of the guys who signed up to my program for January. So you can sign up to my BKF online program early and start, but the program doesn't start till January. And he literally got the nutritional plan and he was like, "Me," he goes, "what the fuck?" He goes, "I thought we were going to be fasting on this program." And I was like, "Why did you think we were going to be fasting?" He goes, "Well, you do micro fasting, you do fasting, you know, you do high fat diet." And I was like, "Okay." I was like, "Are you training for a 100-mile ultra marathon?" He was like, "No." I was like, "Are you trying to lose a couple of kilos to train for that marathon?" He was like, "No, I want to build muscle." I was like, "Okay, that's why you're not doing what I'm doing." And that answer, like I was saying it in a jokey way, and that answer is always, that's why I'm so conscious on my social media platforms, on my podcasts, everything, to let people know that this is my end goal, and the way that I'm eating and the way that I'm training is in alignment with my particular end goal at this moment in time. And Charlie's exactly the same. Like, if your goals are matched exactly like Charlie, you have the same training history, you have a similar metabolism, I'm like, doing what he does is probably going to help you. But the majority of people in the world have different goals. We have different bodies. We have different training histories. We have different abilities to digest different foods in different ways. So I think it's important to understand that it's always goal dependent on the person. And what I do and what Charlie does isn't necessarily what everybody should do. That's one of the reasons why I love chatting with Charlie, because he's like, "Well, this is what I do, but this is what I do with clients." And sometimes it's the same, and then a lot of times it's different. So when it comes to carbs and fats for me, I work way better off fats, and I do a lot of fat-based diets because because I'm trying to fuel my body for endurance. So when I'm running ultra marathons, particularly like longer runs, so anything over marathon distance, the actual ultra, or a long training day, you know, I did a 30 kilometer run at the end of my workout on Monday, and it'll be 35 kilometers next week. So they're quite long runs, and I do them at the end of my weight workouts.
How many calories a day do you eat?
I haven't a clue at the minute, Charlie. I don't track calories at all now. And this is when I get up to that level of training. So as I get closer to an event, my training tends to ramp up. You know yourself, similar to a show, like your training tends to ramp up. And for me, it's all about just fueling my body and recovering. You know, body composition is pretty low down on my list of goals. And, you know, I'm lucky in the sense that I'm quite, you know, short and stocky, kind of built like a hobbit anyway. So, like, I'm never going to be lean and skinny. Like, you know, I'm that fucking short and stocky farmer build. Like, so I'm fine in the sense that I always maintain the muscle that I have, regardless of how much I run or how much I train. But when it comes to the way that I eat around that, and the days that I'm hungry, I'll eat more. And the days that I'm not as hungry, I eat less. Now, I do something similar that we're going to talk about later when we get to fasting, because you made such an interesting point earlier that we're going to expand on about your thoughts on fasting, intermittent fasting, microfasting, etc. I try and get all of my food in during a time-restricted window. So even if I'm eating, you know, 5,000 calories a day or I'm eating 2,000 calories a day, I try and condense that all into an 8 or 10-hour eating window because, one, it fits into my lifestyle and suits my schedule, but two, it makes me a little bit more fat-adapted, meaning that when I'm actually on longer runs and doing endurance work, I can tap into those fat stores. And I don't, for anyone that's listening, and you might may be familiar with this, Charlie, or may not be, runners get what's called a boink, where they literally, like, are running and they just hit this wall, and that's normally like when people have depleted glycogen and they're trying and they're not metabolically flexible enough to switch over to fat stores, and they get this feeling of like hitting the wall. Like, I never get that because I run primarily off fats versus carbohydrates. It's carbohydrate fueled athletes that tend to get that problem. So when it comes to what I do, that's my reason for consuming a lot more dietary fats. And again, it changes based on training seasons, based on what I've done that previous day, etc. But when it comes to finding what works better for each individual person with carbs and fats, so to answer your question, I haven't a fucking clue what my calorie intake is. But to answer the question on how to determine if someone works better off fats or carbs, I think, as you said, you made a great point there. Like, if somebody has that self-awareness around their own nutrition initially, before they work with a coach, with me, with you, with the personal trainer, with an online coach, with whoever, having that information is very valuable. If you know that you work very well off carbohydrates, and as you said, carbs are life. Like, if that phrase or word has ever entered your mouth, then you're like, you're probably going to work well off carbs. That's never, I've never uttered those words because I've never really, carbs have never, apart from like chocolate and like the fucking trigger food carbs where I'm like, yeah, give me more of that shit. Like, with the exception of those carbs, like, I could go through the rest of my life without eating potato or rice and I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Like, I don't really care, but I do love my fats. I love almond butter. I love oils. I love fatty foods. Like, my body works really well off those and has done for as long as I can remember. Now, when I used to compete in bodybuilding, I would do similar to what you did, a carbohydrate cycling protocol. And that's one of my favorite methods of nutritional plans for people to follow when composition is the goal. But whether you run better off carbs or fats, it can be as simple as asking that question. You know, as you said, are carbs life? Like, if you think that way, then you're probably going to be able to adhere and sustain a diet that has a higher intake of carbohydrate. And all you do then is manipulate your fat intake so that your calories match your end goal to lose fat, to build muscle, to, you know, lose weight, whatever your end goal is. And I think the reverse works for people that are better with fats. You know, if you work better off having fats and then just have a structured refeed every 7, 10, 14, 21 days, whatever you want, either with free foods or cheat meals or whatever it is, or, you know, healthy sweet potato and baked potatoes and rice, etc., and you have a structured refeed just to make sure you don't get any metabolic stalling, like, that's going to be really beneficial. But I think coming added from a what's your end goal standpoint and looking at carbs and fats as tools, that if you have this tool in your toolkit and you know you work better off one or the other, that's going to help you or your coach determine what plan you're going to be able to stick to long term. I think that is going to be very important, or that can be very beneficial to understand for everybody. Like, I'm sure you're the same, Charlie. When you get a client that comes to you and goes, look, I do really well off carbs, or I do really well off fats, or whatever, anything in between, it's very useful as a coach to be like, cool, let's prioritize this now. And then you can kind of adapt things as you go along.
100% agree with that. And again, it comes down to, as we said earlier, every single person is unique and different.
Yeah. Like, I think at the end of the day, That's literally what it does. And I just want to kind of hammer home that point that what I do, what Charlie does, what any social media fitness person does, like, always remember what somebody else does, they're doing it for their specific goals. Like, that's the advantage to working with a coach, you know, with whoever you're working with, or the advantage of researching and educating yourself on the different dietary strategies and training strategies to hit a specific end goal. Because following and copying somebody else, there's so many variables that haven't been considered there. You know, the training history, injuries, how you deal with certain foods, your trigger foods that we talked about in the episode in August, like, they're all going to be different based on the person. So don't ever go with a one size fits all. Like, this is when I think of, when I see it on social media, and this is why I love your content, Charlie, because it's so clearly, let's find what works best for you. And I love that message. But sometimes when you go onto social media profiles, you can see, you know, this is what everybody should do, this is the vegan diet everyone should do, this is the training program everyone should do. And you're like, that's like somebody giving you the winning lottery numbers. I'm like, you know, winning lottery numbers work for the person that won the lottery with them, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to work for you.
And that's, for me, like, for me it's nothing worse than being like a one trick pony and being narrow minded with your approach. And I, like, for me, I'm a training nutrition nerd, so like, I love going on training seminars and nutrition seminars. So I'm going on a seminar this weekend actually to Edinburgh with Dr. Scott Stevenson, who'd be a great guest on your podcast actually. So like, he's probably one of the most intelligent guys in the world when it comes to training nutrition. They call him the bodybuilding physiologist. So he's a cool guy. But I'm doing that seminar this weekend, but I also did a seminar earlier in the year with Milos Sarchev, and one of the best things that he said at the very start that I bought into him straight away was, this is what he said. He said, all this information here, this is my own personal anecdotal experience. You interpret this how you feel fits best for you. And like, that for me, like, when he said that, I was like, bang on the money. Like, that's my thought process as well with everything that I have learned so far. And what I say to people is like, this is my knowledge now. This is what I find has worked for myself and anecdotal evidence with clients. You interpret this how you feel fits best for you, because you're different than I am and you're different than the clients I've worked with in the past. And like, that for me was golden.
I love that. That's such a great message. Charlie, back to the questions that we covered earlier. Thoughts on fasting?
Intermittent fasting. This is a very, like, everything in fitness tends to go, in nutrition goes in cycles, depending on what's popular in the media. Now, in terms of intermittent fasting, generally, I'm not a fan of this. But again, it comes down to the specifics of what your goal is. And it depends, as always. So that's a very specific question. Like, it's a specific question, but like, you can't give a specific answer without knowing all the information. So in terms of intermittent fasting, I'm a big fan of it, like, counterintuitively, when actually bulking, looking to add muscle mass. Now, the reason for this is, when you're looking to try and add muscle mass, you're going to be eating a lot of food. Now, anyone who's been doing this for a while, eating 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day, will know this gets very tedious very fast, and you'll feel bloated, and you'll feel, in a polite way, that nothing is moving through you. Now, a great way to reset your digestion, keep hunger levels higher, and generally probably for overall health is optimal, and also to keep you probably a little bit leaner as well to a degree, is to throw in like an intermittent fast, maybe every week to 10 days. Probably every 10 days is probably optimal. Now, what I would look to do with a client, for example, or myself, is I would fast, say, from whenever my last meal was in the evening, 9 o'clock, to say maybe 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock the next day. Now, that's not a huge fasting window, but it just gives your stomach a bit of a digestive break, because otherwise you're constantly pounding in food that's trying to digest over and over and over again. And again, that's going to cause digestive issues. And chances are the food you're pushing in, you're not going to be uptaking particularly well. And like, again, it comes down to, it's not what you eat or just throw down your gullet. It's what your body actually absorbs and takes in. So if you're getting to the point where you're having bad stools, for example, you've got no hunger, you feel bloated, you feel sluggish when training, I would suggest maybe giving this a try, maybe every 10 days, and you should find it makes a big difference. Other times, I'm a fan of intermittent fasting. If you're in a fat loss phase and you were a client of mine who, for example, some of my clients who work in the city, I'm a fan of them using it if they've got very busy lives and they haven't got time to be eating, sitting down eating 4, 5, 6 meals a day. And they train in the evening, I may well get them to fast the first few hours of the day and then have maybe 3 meals later on in the day. The reason generally I'm not a fan of intermittent fasting, and I find myself and with clients, is that it tends to lead to a famine and feast mentality where you don't eat until, say, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by that point, you are so hungry and ravenous that once you start eating, you cannot stop. And chances are that you're like, because you're so hungry, the foods you want to go and eat aren't maybe going to be the best choices. You're going to be more likely to be led astray, and therefore you're less likely to adhere to your diet. Now, your results are directly like linked to your adherence. Adherence is the key to you achieving success, providing your program is set up correctly and your diet is correct. If you like, if you adhere to a program and a diet that's correct, you will get results. 100% is guaranteed, it's possible. So that's my thoughts generally on intermittent fasting. The other time I personally love intermittent fasting is when traveling. So if I'm doing a long haul flight, I will fast for a couple of reasons. It's a pain in the ass to carry, like, to prep four meals to eat on a 15-hour flight or 12-hour flight. Secondly, I don't want to eat the plain food because I've generally noticed when I eat plain food, it tends to mess up my digestion. And I also find flying, eating like carbohydrates or salty food, your stomach tends to have a bit of a meltdown anyway. And it also gives you a great way to like reset your digestive system. And also, like, if you're going on holiday, you're probably going to be overeating, overindulging in calories. You're going to be having a great time. It'll offset some of the damage from that on the way there and the way back. And also on the way back, it will give your stomach again a bit of a break if you've been overeating and overdrinking perhaps. So that's generally my thoughts on intermittent fasting. I don't know what you find to work best for you, Parson and Brian, or if you've tried it yourself.
Yeah, the only thing I'm going to add to that, because I think you nailed the nail on the head with everything there, is that the feast or famine approach and the ravenous binging, like, that's something that I've experienced myself that hopefully I'll try and provide a bit of value here for people that are experimenting with intermittent fasting. And I do intermittent fasting and have done for probably nearly 2 years now. So as I started training for Marathon des Sables, I was intentionally trying to make myself more fat adapted because I knew I was going to be running six back-to-back marathons in the Sahara with limited food. So I had to get my body used to running on stores that I already had as opposed to getting, food from the outside. And I experimented with fasting and I've kept it. You know, I try and eat everything between an 8 and 10 hour window, and then sometimes I'll do longer fasts on a Saturday or Sunday if it's a rest day. But the ravenous binging, the feast or famine approach, is something that I experienced in the beginning of intermittent fasting, where I would skip breakfast and lunch, and then come 3 or 4 p.m., I would be ravenous, absolutely starving. And as you mentioned there, I would eat some good food, but a lot of it wasn't. I was going to, we joked in the August episode about the trigger foods, you know, chocolate's my trigger food, certain chocolates. But like, all food becomes fucking trigger food when you're starving. And for me, it led to kind of overeating. And I found when I became a little bit more fat adapted, that stopped happening. It just, when my body got better at utilizing dietary fat or fat on my body, to the form of ketosis, just when that's what happens when people go into intermittent fasting and become more fat adapted, that ravenous hunger went away. And generally I find that as long as I'm not eating a massive amount of carbohydrates, that ravenous hunger is fine. I can eat just a fat-based meal or a protein-based meal or a combination of that, and I have no issues with the feast or famine approach. So if anybody is experimenting with intermittent fasting and they're finding that they're massively overeating because they've skipped one or two meals, or you've skipped one or two meals and now you're so hungry you've just overconsumed, that gets better with time. If you train fasted in the morning, which will obviously make you more fat adapted through glycogen depletion, i.e. burning through your carbohydrates that you have, and also your body just becomes more metabolically flexible, meaning that you can use fat as an alternative fuel source instead of carbohydrate. You mentioned popular media diets. I didn't prep you on this at all, but I'm curious, have you watched the documentary The Game Changers?
Do you know what's ironic about this is that in 55 minutes I was supposed to be doing a podcast with James Wilkes, who is the main guy in Game Changers. However, it's now been rearranged for next week. So that's funny you asked that question. My thoughts on that is, try and put it politely.
Tread carefully. The vegans are listening.
don't shoot me. Don't tell me your name, Pike. I think the documentary is incredibly one-sided and biased and doesn't give a true reflection of the reality. And I think a lot of things are taken incredibly out of context in terms of the athletes and the performance results on there. That would be my initial thought process on the documentary. I quite like the way it's filmed, to be fair. And it was interesting to watch. In terms of vegan diets, do I think they are, like, again, it comes down to individual. So what's your goal? Like, from an ethical standpoint, do I think it's cool killing animals to eat them? No. Do I feel slightly guilty that I eat a hell of a lot of meat and that all these animals are dying because I eat them? Yes. However, like, is it optimal you eat a vegan diet to, for an aesthetic or performance point of view? No, in my opinion. Would I recommend it to anyone generally? No, who wants to get in shape. Why? Because chances are, if you're not in shape now, you struggle to stick to a diet. So if you can't stick to a normal diet, how are you going to stick to a vegan diet where you can't eat probably 90% of the food you normally eat anyway? And something that I like is a saying that I think Martin McDonald said that I absolutely loved. I was like, the reason people statistically become healthier on a vegan diet is not because they cut out meat. It's because they start eating vegetables and fruit. That is that is it. Like, that is it.
Yeah, that's like one of the... Anytime I get asked, and I eat mostly plant-based now just because it suits my lifestyle, but one of the questions I ask absolutely everybody when they ask me about any diet, vegan, paleo, intermittent fasting, whatever it is, but particularly ones that are like specific on certain food groups. So vegan's a great example because it's like eliminating meat, dairy, etc. I'm like, well, what are you comparing it to? I'm like, you know, if you've gone from a standard American diet or a standard Irish diet where you're eating a lot of processed food and McDonald's three times a week, and then you start eating more fruits and vegetables in a plant-based vegan diet, you're going to feel fucking amazing. Like, if that's what you're comparing it to. Like, but with every diet, and I'm going to offer, because I haven't touched on this podcast at all about watching Game Changers, because I didn't watch it for a long time, because I'm like, fuck, I really struggle to watch heavily biased documentaries anyway.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's frustrating because... And the advice that I offered on my Instagram story earlier this week, I'm like, by all means, watch it. But I'm also a big fan on guarding against the information you put into your mind. I'm like, if you have a good background or basis and foundation in nutrition, watch it. Because you'll see that it's very heavy. Like, the way it's really persuasive. Like, that's the...
Oh, it's cleverly filmed. It's very cleverly filmed.
Yeah, it's a really, really, really well shot documentary. And one of the things I was trying to hammer home to people, I'm like, the job of a documentary is to persuade you. I'm like, that's literally its job. It's like, whatever the message is, the entire film is geared towards persuading you in a given way. And I think it's very good at that. But my issue with that is because of that persuasiveness, if you don't have a good knowledge of nutrition going into it, you're not going to be able to, you know, pick out the fact that it's very heavily cherry-picked with the evidence that they've used. And by all means, I'm a massive fan of plant-based diets. I'm a massive fan of vegan diets and lifestyles for people. I'm like, if that's what's working for you, I'm like, yeah, if that's your life choice and that's the dietary protocol you want to follow, that's one, probably one of the better ones out there. But realizing that that documentary is so heavily biased in one way and it's not providing any counter arguments on the other side. Like, I love documentaries that provide the evidence on both sides and then let you pick which one's the most compelling. I'm like, I like those kind of documentaries, but they don't fucking hit number one on Netflix. Like, it's the one that are going to give people polar opinions. You know, I think that's an important message. But as you said, Charlie made a great point here, and I'm going to bounce it back to you now. The issue with vegan diets isn't the fact that it's not good or bad. It's, again, it comes down to the context of the person. You know, every diet out there, vegan, paleo, keto, etc., like, they all have pros and cons. The problem with the Game Changers, or my main issue with it, is cutting out meat and fish, the foods that have the essential amino acids that your body is going to use for recovery primarily as an athlete. It's not that you can't get those from plants. It's just that it's way easier to eat one food source than combining different foods so that you can get all those essential amino acids. So it's not a case that you can't do it. It's just that it's probably going to be easier to build lean muscle tissue, to repair muscle cells if you're an athlete in a performance sport, by consuming those foods. By all means, you can do it without it. But I feel that, and I'm not sure how you felt about this, Charlie, that was never given as an opinion. That was never given as an alternative. And that was kind of my main issue. I'm like, fuck, you could have totally addressed that and still made your point. And, you know, but they never did that. And that was kind of my only, like, if I was to pick out, apart from the cherry-picked evidence, that was my only issue. I'm like, you totally could have said this and still had a good point to me, like, you can do it with a plant-based diet. This is just another alternative, as opposed to ruling that out or not covering it or touching on it at all.
I agree entirely. And I apologize if I offended you with if you're following a vaguely plant-based diet.
No, it's so I am. I last week's episode of the podcast, I had Kim Constable on, and she's the shredded vegan on Instagram. And she had one amazing 7-minute rant given out about vegans. some of my closest friends are just like lifetime vegan people. But it's what it represents. It's like, you know, you can be a twat and be vegan. You can be really nice and be vegan. You know, you can be a twat and be a bodybuilder, and you can be really nice and be a bodybuilder. You know, same as ultra runner, same as CrossFitter. Like, you know, it's the, but she went off on a 7-minute rant, which is amazing, about, she's like, yeah, I'm plant-based, I'm vegan, and, you know, be nice. She was like, don't be a dick.
That's the BYO end, for me, I quite frankly don't give a shit what anyone does. Like, if you, that makes you happy and you find that makes, gets you results and it works for you, awesome. Like, all the power to you. But for me, it's the same as like you shouldn't compare veganism to religion, but like, do what you like, as long as you don't hurt anyone else or preach upon anyone else, then like, it's fine. Do whatever you like. Do you know what I mean? That's my opinion on pretty much everything.
Charlie, I couldn't agree more. And I think that is a perfect note to leave it on. Mate, love this format of the podcast, and thank you again for your patience on the recording. Mate, for everybody listening that wants to get in touch with you, I'll link all of these in the show notes. Where can they contact you directly for coaching, for your programs, or just to check you out on social media or your podcast?
So the best place to check me out would be my Instagram page. So if you want to send me direct messages, Charlie Johnson Fitness. My own podcast is called The Power Cast. I'm over on YouTube at Charlie Johnson Fitness. And my for my coaching, I run Shred an 8, which is probably nearly one of the world's biggest 8-week transformation competitions. So I'll hit that in the show notes if Brian's happy to do that. And also my own coaching link there, which is charliejohnsonfitness.com. So by all means, guys, like, I'm open to any questions. And if you want me to, if anyone wants me to do a podcast or any content, anything specifically, same as Brian, I could ramble on about anything for hours. So it's a pleasure. And I actually love just helping people and discussing these sort of things. It's my passion.
I love it. And for everybody listening, I will put those in the show notes, everything that Charlie just mentioned, on briankeenfitness.com. Charlie, thank you so much again.
Legend, my man. Thank you.
So that's everything from today's episode. Take two went down a treat. When the first 25 minutes went, and I'm like, motherfucking electricity. So I'm absolutely delighted we got to record that. So a massive thank you to Charlie again for that. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to tag me on your Instagram. Take a screenshot of this podcast and tag me and Charlie on your Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness, and Charlie, I think it's Charlie_Johnson. I'll link that in the show notes. You go follow him on Instagram as well. And as always, if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review or subscribe, or do both. Do both. Yeah, do both. If you're enjoying the podcast, leave a review. If you hate the podcast, don't leave a review. Just be like, no, just don't do it. But definitely hit up and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And I'll catch you all next week.